Where did she go?
Lemur, Jack, and Mark had arrived at a dead end after following the trail of yarn she had left in her flight. Jack had to hand it to her. She'd been a lot faster and a lot less noisy than he would have expected, and it had been difficult to track her movements, especially as he had to keep the other two men in sight. Thankfully, she had inadvertently left this yarn trail, which now seemed to vanish beneath the stone wall in front of them.
She cannot simply have walked through a stone wall.
Maybe not. Looked like it, though.
Jack joined Mark at the face of a slab, and they probed the solid stone together.
Must be mechanism. Trigger to open.
Just as there must have been to cut it off. But would that have been this side or on the other?
They moved these?
Yes, that is what we told you. To ensure that the labyrinth has no set configuration, and so cannot be easily solved by those who enter, the walls are capable of realignment to change the patterns of the passages.
A lot of words to say yes.
Are you perhaps thinking that if the slabs are adjustable, there must be triggers to set them off from all sides?
How else work all time?
The two men set to searching across the stone surface and down the walls on each side. There was no need for further explanations, although Lemur, as he stood holding the flashlight on them, may have wished for one.
Clean. Maybe step over trigger?
Not sure how we could have missed that on the way through, but...
Only work once from side went down, but if I can find it, then can lever up, reverse action, maybe.
But what if...
No point what if.
Right.
The two men sank to their knees, indicating that Lemur trained the beam on the hard-packed and stony soil surface. Backing up, covering every inch of the ground with painstaking care, they had backtracked by 5 feet before Mark held up a hand.
Jack, I think I found it.
The albino youth crawled over to where Mark was smoothing the dirt covering from what seemed at first glance to be nothing more than a patch of bare ground. But as Jack took a closer look, he could see the outline of a hexagonal shape imprinted in the dirt. Faint lines appeared where the finer particles of dust fell down the slight gap between the step trigger and the surrounding earth.
That's it, all right. But how are we supposed to release it?
Pressure make drop, so pressure bring back up.
Jack palmed one of his leaf-bladed knives so smoothly that Mark was taken aback by the glint of the blade suddenly appearing in Jack's fist. The albino youth slid the blade down the slight gap and began to work at the step and the earth around. It was a slow process, but he had little option but to continue. To leave Cyan behind was something that couldn't be contemplated. So he continued to work at the soil, wearing it away so that he could lever the blade down, try to make it bite into the stone of the step, perhaps even underneath, and lever it up.
Oh, fuck!
Jack jumped back in surprise as the mechanism gave and his knife slipped. The blade flew up as though from a spring, the tension released as the stone step parted company with the mechanism beneath, spinning out of its hole and across the ground.
Lemur, light!
Certainly, Jack.
As the beam spread down into the gap in the ground, he was able to see the locked spring mechanism. The stone step had been a covering, and had been easier to pry loose than he thought. But it still hadn't released the mechanism. At least now he could actually see what was going on down there. The trigger locked into a wheel and cog system that drove the slab pivots. For all these mechanisms to work, however the walls were arranged, a tiny tunnel system had to be embedded within the soil. Jack could see how it worked, and the gap left by the broken step was large enough for him to get his hand down. Squeezing in up to the wrist, his supple fingers were soon able to release the spring. The mechanism cut his hand on release, but he was soon rewarded for this as the slab began to move. Quickly starting to bind his hand with a piece of torn cloth, he rose to his feet to join Lemur and Mark, and was greeted by the sight of Cyan, huddled against another dead end, 10 yards in front of him, the ball of yarn at her feet.
My darling!
Lemur pushed past Jack and Mark, running toward where she hunkered down.
Lemur!
Without a thought, he set off after the Memphis chief, knowing that whatever happened, he would have just fractions of a second in which to make a difference. Lemur ran flat-footed, slowly. It was easy for Jack to catch up to him, and to sense that something was wrong.
Et toi!
Jack sprang off his toes, launching himself into the small of Lemur's back. Momentum lifted them both from the ground before they thudded down again. Darts flew out of concealed holes. Jack's lunge carried them past the flight of the weapons. 2 darts embedded themselves in the heel and sole of his left boot, the force of their impact knocking his legs to one side so that he landed awkwardly, feeling his ribs jar, his elbows and skull slamming against the man underneath him. Mark rushed up to them, saying something that Jack couldn't quite take in as he shook his head to clear it.
You did it, Jack!
You saved our beloved chief. You're a miracle in the flesh, a savior among our people.
Okay, okay. Cut crap and move.
Jack climbed unsteadily to his feet, and then paused to pull the darts from his boot. As he did, he watched the others. Mark was seeing if his leader was all right. Lemire, for his part, was a little dazed, but his relief at seeing his wife alive took away all thoughts of his own brush with danger. But Cyan seemed distant from everything, as though she couldn't understand what had happened. She seemed oblivious to almost everything going on around her. Maybe it was just shock. Even so, Jack couldn't work out how, short of blind luck, she had managed to avoid triggering the trap. It nagged at the back of his mind. But he shook his head. There was no time to worry about that now. They had lost valuable time and ground. It was imperative that they start trying to get out of this labyrinth, try to rendezvous with the others. That was assuming, of course, that anyone else managed to get out of here alive. Strategy. That was the key. If any of the four teams were to make it through the labyrinth, let alone all of them, then there had to be a plan. Mildred's idea of using the yarn to mark their path had been simple. Those who were forging a clear path could mark for those that came after. And if you should take a wrong turn and need to backtrack, the yarn would enable you to retrace your steps without risking the possibility of taking another wrong turn upon another, compounding your confusion. No one in Memphis had been able to tell them, even if there was only the one entrance and exit to the maze. With no time to wreck the area, Ryan and GB had thought it best to assume that there may be an entrance and exit built into each of the four sides of the maze. This would give the planners of the maze a much greater option in rebuilding and realigning the interior. If they so wished, they could leave only one or all four, or any combination in between, open. If this was the case, then the four teams wanted to ensure as much as possible that they would be able to make their way through the labyrinth and emerge together at the same spot. To be split up and break through at different areas would be disastrous. And now that they were in the labyrinth, it was proving harder than any had imagined to follow the trails of yarn, to keep at least a semblance of contact with each other. The yarns knotted, got pulled tight, and broke. They were dropped, kicked to one side, where flash beams couldn't catch them under layers of freshly turned dirt. It had reached a point where all four teams were now acting almost independently of one another. And yet, the system had worked well enough to keep them on track. JB's innate sense of direction and Jack's ability to sniff out danger and direction like a hunting dog had enabled these two teams to keep on track, despite the delay engendered by Cyan bolting from her fellows. Mildred had been careful to ensure that Mythos had paid out his line with care, so that even if they lost the trail of the others, they wouldn't double back on themselves. And Ryan's own innate sense of direction, mixed with the care he took to ensure his line was laid properly, kept his own track sound. They were moving toward their target. What would be beyond the exit was one thing. What was certain was that they would be able to tackle it as a whole unit.
Dark night. I think we're almost at the end.
I can but hope. I know I, for one, will be glad to escape this hellhole. But that will be nothing compared to the relief of our fellows. Too much longer in here, and I fear that their nerves will crack.
JB looked back over his shoulder at the two young Sekhmen who comprised the other half of the team. They were following on his heels, but it was easy to see that their faces were taut with tension. All the more reason to reach the open. JB pressed ahead to the next junction. Even before he reached it, he knew the adjacent passage to theirs led to the outside. Some ambient light bled through, and the air was fresher and carried the hint of a breeze.
Okay, we're nearly there. Triple red. I know you want out of here more than I do, but we need to wreck to see what's on the outside.
The two Sekhmen nodded, their set expressions unchanging.
Want me to take a look?
Should be me, Niney. I'm head of this unit, and one of the privileges of that is getting to take all the risk.
The responsibility of leadership, eh? Sometimes it's just as well to be a humble foot soldier.
Tell me about it. Looks like we're the first to get here. Let's hope we're not the only ones. Meantime, I'm going to risk a look around the entry. Stay here.
The armorer shrugged the mini-Uzi from his shoulder and set it to fire short bursts. He edged toward the corner of the exit passage. He knew that there would be a stretch of dead earth between the portal and the first buildings of Atlantis. Would he be able to see anything across the distance? He was sure that there would be Nightcrawler teams posted opposite any exit, waiting for them. A lone face in an exposed portal would be easy meat. He reached the point of no return. Still in shadow, he could see the opposite wall of the exit tunnel. Angling his head, it became clear that the tunnel was about 10 yards long, ending in a stone portal, much the same as the one through which they had entered the labyrinth. JB decided a little experiment would be in order. Taking the fedora from his head and giving it a little wistful look before acting, he threw it into the open passage. There was nothing. As he edged around the corner, feeling the sweat stream down his brow and dapple his chest and back, sticking his shirt to him, he was aware of the pulse pounding in his throat and thumping in his chest. JB stepped into the light, the mini Uzi in front of him. Ahead, the corridor seemed to stretch for miles. Every step seemed to take him backward. As he got closer to the portal leading out into the wasteland, the angle of his view increased to take in a greater section of the vill in front of him. Eventually, he stood in the portal to one side, his shoulder resting against the right-hand wall, the blaster still poised, but staring in surprise at the oddity that lay beyond. The companions had considered the haphazard design of Memphis bizarre, but the layout of Atlantis surpassed it. For Atlantis took the strangest parts of Memphis and discarded those elements that had been familiar. All traces of the suburban ruins that had been woven between the newer constructions of Memphis had been eradicated from this area, and it was only the bizarre buildings that remained. There was no wall past the patch of poisoned earth, only the straight lines of roads that weren't paved, sidewalks that had no curbs, and buildings that were constructed of bleached stone and brick, with squat designs that were square or rhomboid, roofs and porticos supported by immaculately carved pillars. It looked like a model of ancient Greece, if the armorer had known what that was. There were only two buildings that climbed above a two-story level, and both appeared to be situated in the center of the ville. One was 5 stories and looked to have been around for as long as the rest of the ville. The other was much taller and was still under construction. Flimsy scaffolding circled it, and workers milled like insects over the face of the building. Closer to the maze and the parched earth surrounding it, Atlanteans dressed in red, black, and predominantly white went about their business, sparing not a thought or glance for the maze and the opening in which JB stood surveying them. It crossed his mind that those who were content to live under Odyssey's regime, or who were too scared to risk making a break, were so secure in the impenetrability of the labyrinth that it had never occurred to them that they might be watched from its entrances. At the same time, the fact that they were blithely going about their business suggested that they were unaware of an attack being mounted. JB's mind raced, weighing up possibilities. Could it be that none of the Nightcrawlers had reached Atlantis and reported to Odyssey? He found that impossible. Nonetheless, there had been no sect to pick him off as soon as he appeared, and it seemed as though the populace had been unaware of any imminent arrivals. Could it also be that Odyssey was so confident in the impregnability of his maze that he was unconcerned about any of the attacking party made it through? JB grinned. Now that really was a stupid thought. Best option as far as he could see it was this. The crawlers had reported back, but they had no idea of the real size of the Memphis force. It may have been just the party they encountered, or it may have been a vanguard. In which case, Atlantis needed to be on an all-out war footing. Looking at the people going about their business unaware of him, he had to say that it didn't look too much like a war footing to him. It was all second-guessing, but he would assume that the Nightcrawlers were on full guard, waiting to move as soon as any offensive was taken, meanwhile keeping a low profile so as not to concern the general populace. Certainly everyone was busy, and it didn't look as though Odyssey was about to let them stop. JB wasn't to know that Odyssey would never commit a full populace to battle while the vessel was still under construction, not with the alignment so close. JB edged back into the shadows, feeling a little more assured than when he had started out. Attaining his previous position, he was more than pleased to see Ryan and Mildred set crews waiting for him.
What took you so long?
You know what it's like. You think you know your way, and then it turns out you made a left instead of a right, and...
A brief exchange between the three companions established that they had managed to find their way to this spot, despite each other's trails petering out along the way. The fact that they had made it here independently suggested that there may indeed be only one way in and out of the labyrinth.
If that's the case, then all the crawlers are going to be concentrated on this area, right, John?
JB scratched his head and placed his fedora, retrieved on his retreat, on the back of his skull, before outlining the scene he had witnessed.